Morning, Whip.
How are you, Honorable Benisworth?
Yeah, Killer, we're listening, Johnny.
I thank you that you are a shop steward for the honorable members. compliments to all the members.
Umkai, I shop steward.
Who is shop steward? Compliments, sweep.
It's not a reliable one, that one. This represents you. No, honorable members, on a serious note, the chair is struggling with the network, and also there's no trading where she is. She requested that I share the meeting while she's trying to connect, and I think we should start now without delaying the meeting. And I just want to welcome everyone in the meeting. Been the Deputy Minister, Honorable Mashego Dlamini, welcome the Deputy Minister. That's been also the DG. Welcome DG, and welcome to all the honorable members and the staff members that are here with us, and everyone who's with us. Without wasting any time, Mubavala, are you able to flight the agenda for the meeting?
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Batman.
Sorry, if I may, there's an apology from Honorable Chetsi's. I've sort of introduced Honorable Faber, who's here in Honorable Chetsi's place. Obviously, I would have come to you before the meeting, but it's a bit far to walk up to you and just spend your time. So just if I may, just let you know that he's on Zoom with us. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. No, I think that's fine. Thanks very much for that, Honorable Batman. Babano? Not Dubabado, Mr. Square. Sorry. Can you unmute your mic?
Yes.
Hello. Yes. changing who has good equipment. Those are the four. Okay, well, thanks very much for that. Just,
fighting the pandemic in South Africa.
better reflect your negotiations, initiatives during this era of fasting diplomacy is not used and well received. Though COVID-19 has not hit Africa as badly as some experts feared, wealth disparities, logistical difficulties, and vaccine nationalism by richer nations may put the continent at a disadvantage. As a non-permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, South Africa was regarded as having worked hard to show its refined positions, and it voiced its intervention as an African team member. This is an area of priority too for the community, for the committee, to hear how the department performed during its term in the UN Security Council. Thank you. I will then move to request the department DG and your team to take us through your presentation. And I will request that you complete all your presentation, and then we'll then engage afterwards, as we normally do when we are having these kind of meetings. The DGs?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and my boss is my two Deputy Ministers. We thank you for the opportunity to come and present to this Honorable Committee the first reporting under the new APP, which was duly reviewed and adopted by the committee. And it is really a refreshing occasion for us to come then to present back to the committee what we have been doing, and compliments of the new year. In the way we are reporting, will be assisted by my colleagues. For performance reporting, Ms. Laura Scotte will assist me, and the finance reporting, the CFO will assist me. And for the African Renaissance Fund, Ms. Lerato Sempo will assist me, as she's acting head of the Secretariat, and I will attempt to summarize, if it will not delay the committee further. I must indicate that we have really done an analysis of our progress report for the quarter, for the two quarters, and we have also looked at some of the things that still need improvement as a result of the fact that in the first quarter in particular, we were just at the onset and we reached the peak of the pandemic, and we had not yet mastered remote working as well as online working. But fortunately, the system that we are using and that the DPME has actually assisted us with is that should you not manage to do a target of a particular quarter, you are still carrying it over to the next quarter. It becomes your quarter two target. So as honorable members will notice, there will be instances where we indicate where we might have not managed to achieve, but we later then achieve those targets at a later stage. But the bigger picture, or not necessarily to the next quarter, but in the end, when we do the annual report, we'll be able to give account of the full measure of what we did over the course of the year in the four quarters. But in this case, I'm only referring to what happened in the quarter one and quarter two. it is really timely that we will do this just after we briefed the committee about the annual report 2 months ago, but it is still a good time for us to review some of the issues that would have an impact on this current reporting cycle. May I request the indulgence of the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members to hand over to Ms. Koto to start off with the performance reporting, and that will be followed by the CFO, and then the Acting Secretariat will then take us through and will be pleased to take questions thereafter. I thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and Honourable Deputy Minister, and my colleagues.
Okay, thanks very much, DG. I think they can proceed. It's fine.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. If I may then just ask that we put the presentation on the screen for me then to start. I will not stream the video because it slows down the internet reception, so if we can screen the presentation. I will then start whilst we're waiting for the presentation to be screened. We are at this time, thank you so much DG, Deputy Ministers, Chairperson, as well as Honourable Members. At this time we are presenting, as DG rightly indicated, our quarter one and our quarter two, and it is the first time and a response to what we have prepared in terms of the new planning framework. When we look at our report and we look at the detail, the richness of the report, which tells us that in terms of our target setting, it helps us to improve our reporting. And that definitely, as derived from what the Chairperson has indicated as well, gives us a better opportunity and platform to engage on the information. The Chairperson, I don't see the presentation yet. Is it the Secretariat that's supposed to flag it? Because I'd like to go then to slide 4 already on program 1.
Slide 4 is on the screen.
Okay, there's nothing on my screen, so I will then, because I have the agenda but I don't see the presentation, so apologies for that. I will then talk to the slide, and I would hope that whoever manages it will then show it, because I don't see it on my screen.
Okay.
So on slide 4, if we...
There is something on the screen, on my iPad, I don't know. It talks about program 1 and administration. Is that not
thank you so much.
Okay.
Yes, my screen is not working. Yes, thank you so much. Apologies for that. So Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, what we are looking at is we look at quarter 1 and 2, and then for ease of reference, we looked at against the annual targets instead of being quarter 1 target, quarter 2 target, but also I would then highlight the areas where we had our non-achieved in quarter 1, however it was in quarter 2, but where our quarter 2 targets were not achieved. So with regard to the ISO 9000 certificate, this is a certificate that is issued after an audit on the quality management system, which is the system that the DTRB, the Diplomatic Academy, uses in order to manage the training programs, the internal reviews, and the customer feedback. So that audit took place, and they were then certified to be compliant, which then gives us a sense and comfort in terms of the management processes of the Diplomatic Academy. And this is one of the issues that the Academy, when we tabled our strategic plan and APP, it was one of the aspects that they identified to attest to the quality of what they are producing. Secondly, in terms of what they targeted in the department, was to do a gap analysis and then develop an implementation plan on building the institutional capacity. Now, yes, in quarter one, the gap analysis was supposed to be completed. However, because that was the time when we just found ourselves in the hard lockdown, and as BG indicated, we had to reorientate and reorganized the working arrangements. So during quarter one, the process was not complete. completed. However, and when we went into level 2 and 3, where people could go on work rotation and we could access the office again, the work was then completed. So the gap analysis was completed. Some of the outcomes of that gap analysis, for example, showed that we have limited human resource capacity. When I talk about that, I'm talking about qualified language trainers. So they found that we do not have qualified language trainers for all the languages. We insource some of it at the moment. Something else was the lack of training infrastructure. If the honorable members visit the department, and I trust that the last time we did take you through our language laboratory, we have smart whiteboards, but that's not the only technology that we're looking at. So one of the gaps that we've identified is that we need training infrastructure and resources. And then, of course, we looked at, because we have these gaps, that there's a possibility for collaboration in terms of providing training. So that is in terms of the gap analysis. With regard to our legal services, yes, this target is the way that we've been reported. It is because we render a service, it is written as a responsive target. So when OXLA, our Office of our Chief State Law Advisor, receives a request, it can be a request that deals with domestic issues and it may involve personnel issues, or it may be a request, for example, in terms of the validity of some legal instruments for multilateral meetings. Once they receive the request, they would then respond to it and we will then account for it. In terms of the detail of those requests, some of them are confidential and therefore we do not publish it necessarily. With regard to, so we've achieved our targets for quarter one and two, and if we do a comparison with our previous year, we will see that we have definitely, during quarter one, seen a significant reduction in terms of the requests. So basically it's because worldwide there was a slowdown as well as domestically. When we go to slide five, the next slide, when we look at our targets with regard to gender, youth and people with disabilities, annually we wanted to achieve 6 outreach targets. We have for quarter one and two achieved the 3. The one was a webinar colloquium on women, peace and security. It was on the DG having his annual discussion with the SMS female ladies with regard to the 8 principles action plan for promoting women's empowerment and gender equality in the public service, and we've also hosted a workshop on sexual harassment. With regard to the mentoring and job shadowing activities regarding the youth, we have already achieved our annual target. We hosted a youth webinar under the theme Diplomacy and Young People in the Time of COVID, as well as the International Youth Day webinar. When we go to the next slide with regard to the intervention to strengthen the capacity to work, to implement the white paper on the rights of persons with disability, the department during this reporting period had held an awareness session to raise the matters affecting people with disabilities. Although we don't target it, but we're also making sure that we assist them with enabling the workplace. So for example, certain laptops so that officials that are virtually impaired would still be able to work. Then the issue we have not achieved in program one is the issue in terms of formula codes, directives and regulations that may be appropriate. Now I just need to upfront indicate that this work is going a bit slower as what it's supposed to go, but the DGF on a monthly basis, it is reported to the Director General's Forum, which is chaired by the DG, and all the head of branches attend that meeting in order to keep track of it. But with regard to the targets that we have, that is not going according to the targets. So only 3 of our 5 work streams at this point in time, at the end of quarter 2, drafted the codes and the directives in support of the Foreign Service Act. So that is our program 1. So there's one target that we didn't achieve at the end of our midterm, although for quarter 1 we didn't have a gap analysis completed. With regard to program two, which is on the next slide, the honourable members will remember when we tabled our strategic plan, we realized when we were drafting the plan and we looked at our structured bilateral mechanisms as one of the most important vehicles for our bilateral engagement, realized that at the moment, out of the 139 that we have, at the time, we realized that only 13, that is a 9%, and that's the way we published it in this draft plan, were active. And therefore, our management last year then decided that there should be a review of those structured mechanisms. We may have been a bit overambitious to target 100% at the end of quarter two, and of course the wild card of COVID threw everything out, but we are well on our way to achieve the target, although we might not have achieved it at the end of quarter two. When we concluded quarter three, we realized there's further progress. We are making sure that by the end of the year, we would have reviewed all 100% of them. With regard to the next slide, generally then to then introduce our bilateral work, we need to then engage that during this period of time, COVID then, as DG indicated, taught us many lessons. One of them was that your traditional face-to-face diplomacy had to adjust to our virtual engagement. But also because of the worldwide interest and collaboration with regard to COVID and the response to the pandemic, most of our bilateral engagements, virtual telephonic, was on the focus on cooperation. We couldn't travel, so it was cooperation in terms of how to deal with the pandemic. We also know that there was a big impact on investment and trade because all countries became inward-looking during that time. However, the department, through its bilateral work, continued to do that. Now, the detail of that, if we then go to slide 9, is that our regional reports that our branches then drafted in response to what they've targeted and then the work that they've done, we have realized the richness of the information that we can now present to the committee because of the regional reports that we do get. So, for example, Asia and Middle East, in terms of the political work, was particularly around very definitely assisting South Africa and Africa in the battle against the spread of COVID-19. Of course, in quarter one, we know that we were seized with the repatriation of South African nationals, and of course, that was also a core focus of engagement between South Africa and its bilateral branches. And then if we look at the next one, which is for the Americas and Europe region, we can see some detail that we have in terms of the outputs or the agreements that resulted because of our bilateral engagement. We can see the work that has been done. Germany assisted us to construct the field hospitals, the contributions made by some of our other bilateral partners. So as you can see, honourable members, DG Deputy Minister, is that very definitely the focus was how can we leverage our relationship to assist our domestic priority at that time. When we look at the Africa region, of course, Africa at that time, we also looked at how we can continue strengthening our bilateral relations. The peace and security situation in Lesotho, of course, was quite key during that time, and it's, although it's not the only one. And then we also noticed that during this time, we are aware that a couple of years ago when we had our attacks on the foreign nationals, there was a decision that South Africa and Nigeria need to establish a task team. I can report that during this reporting period, they had their first meeting to look at the terms of reference for the early warning mechanism, and that work is undergoing as well. And then, of course, early warning reports regarding the elections on the continent. As well as many of our discussions was how do we deal with our political engagements going forward and also to setting dates for it. When we look at the next slide, slide 12, with regard to the economic diplomacy targets, once again we wanted, when we tabled the APP earlier last year, we tabled it that we wanted the regions to target at the mission and the branch level the detail, but they report back at an appropriate departmental level. And for Asia and Asia and Middle East during this period was very definitely the work in terms of preparation for the presidential investment drive. And we also see that this region proved to be a significant contributor to reaching the investment targets. And we've only highlighted two. For example, Toyota South Africa announced that including the original pledge, they will invest $4.28 billion in the local operations. Isuzu confirmed that it would be investing a further $1.2 billion in the next generation battery programs. So that is just some of the examples. When we come back to do quarter three, which is also coinciding at the end of the presidential investment conference we had, we will then also indicate our contributions, our tangible contributions through our bilateral relations. The next slide, slide 13, is particularly the work that has been done in the Americas and Europe. And what I need to say is when we look at these particularly, apart from what happened at a high level, is the work that has been done at our missions. And we do understand that during this reporting period, we had different levels of lockdown in different countries. So of course it was an impact, but our missions continue to do work. They found different ways to engage virtually and otherwise. So investment discussions for the Americas and Europe was particularly about our African companies investing in Europe. It was to assist business with the intention to invest, expand the business in South Africa because it's very important for job creation and job security in South Africa that we continue to drive that. With regard to the next one, which is like 14 for Africa, our business meetings looked at the global value chain integration, sustainable infrastructure development, food security, which is very important, and of course the accelerated uptake of digital technologies in a post-COVID-19 world. Then when we look at trade particularly, so the first report was an investment, the next slide will then tell us, take us to the trade. Here it was particularly, once again, it is per region. I'm just going to look at the South Africa's rising production volumes for nuts and fruit, the defense equipment opportunities with regard to the export of services, so it's not only products that we are exporting, and then of course they continue to have business meetings with various businesses. With regard to in America and Europe, they continue to promote our South African wines to wine bloggers and wine enthusiasts. And the report that came out at the end of quarter three will show that although the domestic consumption and the domestic income for wine consumption in South Africa decreased during the lockdown, but our exports continued to maintain. So of course, at least it's not a complete loss to the wine industry. Then the discussion was also to contribute to digital learning in South Africa and the digital infrastructure in rural areas. And of course, this coincides well with the concept of the smart city as one of the MTSF targets that we have, MTSF 19-24. With regard to Africa, the next slide, it was particularly to promote economic relationship, partnerships with South African companies in the agricultural sector, which links back and back to food security, and then also to assist South African companies to enter the trade and investment market. They facilitated business-to-business contacts, and this is all the work that we've done at the mission. With regard to tourism, and I've put the tourism once again, and I can separate them because we have found that definitely the devastating impact of COVID can be felt in the tourism sector, and of course that has a ripple effect on all the supporting sectors. However, I need to indicate that medical tourism has been identified as a potential tourism opportunity, and then in the rest of the Americas and Europe was with regard to the promotion of wine. The barriers in the next slide that we've identified, the constraint was of course the restriction of travel because of the global lockdown, the low domestic growth rate, because that also impacts on it. And then of course there's this negative perception related to crime. And I think it was last week that I saw an article that is Durban now the country that is fourth on the list in terms of crime worldwide. Scary if we keep on having articles like that, and it does have an impact. Of course we know that Home Affairs is doing work with regard to the visa the visa regime, but there are still issues in terms of that one. If we can then go to the next slide, which then talks to SADC, what I would like to bring to the attention of the honourable members here is that during this time, of course, South Africa has now taken up or become an incoming chair of the SADC organ on politics and defence and security, and of course this will give us an opportunity to continue assist with the peace, particularly the areas of instability where you have currently within the SADC region. What is important that I'd like the committee to also take note of on the next slide is that our term of office of the current executive secretary as well as the deputy secretary is coming to an end. Now, we know that South Africa was in the position of deputy executive secretary. However, South Africa does not have enough points to compete for the position of executive secretary and is disqualified to compete for the position of the deputy because we've already held that position for 8 years. The impact of that is that we will not be represented at executive management level for the coming 8 years. So there would be really work needs to be done that South Africa can see how it can, at the secretariat level, have a greater influence even if they don't hold the management position. So that is the end of program two. With regards to program three, which is the next slide, our target talks about 85% of the resolutions and outcomes. So yes, because when we're talking about outcomes and resolutions, it's usually that it needs to be by consensus and sometimes with the voting system. So of course South Africa needs to, when we vote in favour, that it would be something that is aligned with our foreign policy. So during this time, as quarter one and two, our focus areas was particularly as chair of the African Union in terms of our continental. We were serving the second year of the non-permanent member of the UN Security Council, and then of course we served and participated in key multilateral meetings, and we know that the main issue for discussion was COVID-19, its response, and of course the new point of discussion is the vaccine. So if we look at the next slide, we participated at the high-level segment of the 75th session, and here it was to consider the impact of COVID. And then at the 73rd World Health Assembly, it was the launch of a global collaboration to accelerate the development and access to COVID-17, must be COVID-19, there's a spelling mistake there. Typo there, apologies for that. Then on the next slide, at the G20 Leaders Summit, it was the G20 Action Plan to deliver international financial assistance and to address the risk to debt vulnerabilities in low-income countries. At the high level of Political Forum Health and the auspices of ECOSOC, it was also to discuss the impact of the pandemic on the progress and the implementation of the 2030 Agenda and the SDGs. And that the foreign policy global health was once again to look at the importance of solidarity, collaboration to mitigate the pandemic and the sharing of resources. When we look at our non-permanent seat in the UNSC, which now have come to a close, and I'm sure that we will receive the invitation to come and do a close-up report as well as an overview of our achievements during our last 2 years and how we continue to do that. So we will wait for that invitation and then for the department to come into detail. South Africa continued to work on the issues, political processes. South Africa continued also to use forge closer link with the two other African countries that served on the council, which was Niger and Tunisia, and also with the other developing countries because collaboration is very important. Then we look at the next slide as a continental cooperation. Of course, we were quite focused, and the chair in the opening remarks quoted our president in terms of the role that we played with regard there. And we know that when we came to the portfolio committee and we tabled our strategy, and because of COVID we had to adjust it and our focus had to move, particularly with regard to the response of the continent to the pandemic. And of course we know that many things were achieved. achieved through that. For example, the establishment of the AU COVID-19 Response Fund, the Africa Task Force for the Coronavirus, the partnership to accelerate the testing in Africa, the Consortium for Clinical Vaccine Trials, the appointment of the Special Envoys, the establishment of the African Medical Supplies Platform, and then, of course, the initiative of the chair to engage our international partners to support the issue of debt relief and for the countries on the continent. So very good work being done. If we look at the next slide, what is important is that we need to know that the two main issues, of course, 2020 coincided with the silencing of the gun, and then the summit that we planned to hold, we did, although it was a virtual one, as well as the one on the AFCTA, which then was to the adoption, and of course now that it's come into force, and then the practical steps, extending the Master Roadmap practical steps for the silencing gun for a period of 10 years. And of course, during this period, South Africa remained seized with the issue of the trilateral negotiations on the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam since June 2019 in terms of what is currently happening in that area. With regard to South-South cooperation, during this period, South Africa prepared and participated in the IORA, and the meeting discussed the new action plan, also the strategic management of IORA with the dialogue partners, and then, of course, the vacancy of the IORA Secretary General position that we have just vacated as well. Then also in South-South, we had the IPSA ministerial dialogue. Next slide, please. We have the IPSA ministerial dialogue as well as, next slide, please, the OAC summit, which was the focus, of course, was on COVID-19 again. And then we also had for the preparation for the structures of BRICS. Next slide, please. Once again, Russia was wishing to advance many of its plans deliverables. However, some of them will only be finalized during the Indian 2021 chairship because of the work that the response that we had with the pandemic, of course, delayed many of the planned initiatives. Then with regard to North-South, we participated in the South African European EU Union Ministerial Dialogue, but we also need to note that the one not achieved here, particularly with regard to our partnerships with the Africa EU, we tried as far as possible to move away from setting targets where we do not have influence over it, because then it results in a not achieved, and then it's like, why didn't you do it? So the AU-EU, some and then we will report when that does take place. That's the end of program three. I'm almost finished, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. And with regard to public diplomacy, we've achieved all our targets. The key messages distributed to missions, this is to assist our ambassadors abroad to have the same information that we have, to make sure that they all have the same message, so that we have a consistent, coherent South African messaging abroad. So during this period, we've already exceeded our annual target because we've distributed 14 already in response to domestic as well as international development. Our PPPs, we're committed to continue for our political principles to engage on the public participation programs. So for the half year, we've done already the six that we targeted to do. Our media statements, we've issued our media statements, our opinion pieces. I've just listed about two of those three that we've submitted to the Daily Maverick. The one was the Middle East plan, and then the other one, let's work to create a global order, and South Africa agreement with South Asian bloc opens up a host of opportunities. Just some of the opinion pieces that our principals wrote and published and had published in some of our newspapers. With regard to state protocol, our protocol services, of course, even that we have move to a virtual engagement, there are still protocol services involved in there, but for this period we had a incoming courtesy visit, and the protocol services responded once again. These are services that we provide, and therefore it is a responsive target, and we report accordingly. What is of note, of course, is that during this period we have 30,477 consular services arrested of assisted, of which 30,383 of those were repatriations due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then also the legalization. Now the legalization, once again, is the one walk-in service. So of course, when there was a hard lockdown, it was closed, and even now you have to make an appointment in order to bring your documents in to be legalized. And we have seen a significant drop in numbers as well here, but for the first two quarters, we legalized 10,777 documents. Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable DG, Honourable Members, I am finished with the performance information. Thank you so much.
Honourable Chair, the CFO will proceed on the finance reporting.
Okay, before that, DG, I just want to acknowledge the presence of the Deputy Minister, but he has been here and he has also disappeared. But let me acknowledge him in his absence, because in joint us, I've already introduced the other Deputy Minister. And welcome, Reverend Justinia, also here with us. And on other things. Can I request...
I am also here.
Thank you. Sorry?
I have also joined Mona.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Honorable Mona. Yes, for coming, and we wish you speedy recovery. Yes, we hope that you are not feeling well, but thanks very much for the commitment. Can I request those who have not named their gadgets? We don't want faithless people in our committee. There's one who's also reflecting as a number here. So can I ask those, otherwise we'll ask the host to remove those people. Because we want to know who's supposed to be here and are the correct people to be in the meeting. We don't want surprises. Yes, DG, can you proceed with your team?
As I said, the finance reporting will be done by the
CFO.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to my members and the DG and the Deputy Ministers. My task is to give additional information on the performance, but on the financial information. Just to give a preamble, Honorable Chair, is that in the first quarter and second quarter, these were unprecedented quarters where the department had to effect cuts on the budget, which amounted to 316 million, which means that our budget then was revised to 6.5 billion as a department, which then aligned with the APP in terms of the funding as well as what we have committed. So in terms of page 14 of the slide of the quarter one expenditure program, which talks to the administration, which is page 34, which talks to the expenditure per program. Program one administration, adjusted budget after the reduction is 1.5 billion. And what was projected for the quarter was 390 million, and the actual expenditure was 313 million, which was in line with what we have budgeted for, and that will amount to 20% in terms of the budget that has been spent in the first quarter. So it aligned with that rate. International relations, which is our program two, the budget that has been adjusted, but that is 3.2 billion, and the projected spending was 954 million, and the actual expenditure for the quarter 899 million, and the variance in terms of the what was done plan was 6%, and the spending was 28%, and this is the area that we then provide our bilateral relations as well as the support that we provide to our mission, which then need to pay for the listings as well as the conversion of employees. Even though the reduction in terms of face-to-face meeting, the overhead still continues. As well as international cooperation program, the adjusted budget is 526 million, and the projected spending that was for the first quarter, 118 million, and what was then actually spent was 183 million, and which was over by 12% in terms of that area of work. And then the spending is 25%, which is aligned in terms of not exceeding the main division. So the public diplomacy and state protocol, the adjusted budget, 325 million, and what was planned or projected for the first quarter, 84 million, and the actual expenditure was 47 million, which talks to the reduction in terms of the official engagement with regard to state visits that were cancelled based on the pandemic and lockdown restrictions. And the variance, 44%, and the spending, 14%. So this is the main problem that was affected, mainly by the lockdown as well as the pandemic in terms of spending, which now the new hybrid model to be considered in order to achieve the planned targets. And the international transfers, this is the problem size with regard to the membership that is payable to UN as well as AU and SADC. The budget is 903 million and the projected for the first quarter, which were due and payable, 629 million, but what was paid was 485 million, and which means the spending is already over 54%, because all these transfer payments, they are not paid monthly, they are paid when they are due as a once-off payment for the budget for the financial day of that particular institution, which for the AU starts in January, as well as the UN start in January until December, but the SADC starts from April, which is aligned to a financial year in terms of reporting. Then we move to the economic classification, conversation of employees. This is where we have a huge challenge in terms of spending. The budget that is adjusted is 3 billion, and what was projected for the first quarter, 812 million, and the actual spending that has been reported, 788 million, and the variance was 3% more than what was planned for the first quarter. But the spending percentage, it's already 26%, which means that in terms of this trend, it's more than the 25% if we look at what each quarter is we spend per the 25% is a threshold. So already we are already 1% higher than what has been budgeted for. And in the first quarter, there was not any adjustment made on compensation employees. The 316 was only applicable to goods and services and payment of capital assets. The goods and services, the budget has adjusted 2.2 billion, and what was projected for the first quarter, 629 million, and the actual expenditure for the first quarter, 567 million, which was 10% lower than what has been planned, and the percentage in terms of spending comes down to 25%, which means that in terms of the spending, the trend of the first quarter shows that we have spent only 25% of that item, which we can still have an opportunity to implement measures to contain the spending to be within the voted funds as well as the main division. The international, the interest and the internal payments has to do with our triple P, our head office building. So this is the money that has been paid in terms of adjustment. The 108 million that is adjusted will not be exceeded in terms of that amount. The transfer payments, as I already reported under transfer program, this is the 53% that we've paid. And the payment of capital assets, which has to do with our properties abroad that we own and where we have capital projects. The budget is 169 million and the projected spending is 81 million, which has to do with the restrictions in terms of the project that we initiated. We are unable to achieve that because there were lockdowns across the world, which were told the contractors that were requested to assist. So we then had to really risk plans for the second quarter, which we still have the same challenge. So we can then move to the slide number 37, we'll go to the second quarter, quarter two, if we can move to page 37, which talks to the quarter two in terms of the statements. So the quarter two, as I indicated, that the budget was still not reduced, and the only adjustment that was made was 6.5 billion during that period in terms of the department, amounting 208 million, which will then report in the third quarter going forward. But in terms of the spending, the same trend continue under this
Thank you.
look at performance review and the protocol, the presumed similar trend could continue as compared to the control one, which is under this program.
Conference where they were funding for manufacturing of vaccines by 20 member states of 25.
find it, we have funded the African Women Empowerment through the AU with 9.2 million, and this was also a pledge that was made by our president. And honorable members, now I will be moving into the administration leg of the project management. So our first indicator there is the percentage of requests evaluated by the ARF Advisory Committee. Our target for quarter 1 and quarter 2 was that 100% of the requests that are received must be evaluated by the Advisory Committee. And indeed, in quarter 1, the Advisory Committee has received 6 proposals and they have reviewed all of them. And in quarter 2, we have not achieved this target because out of the proposals that were received, the committee only evaluated the presidential and legislative elections in the Central Republic, which we eventually funded in December 2020. And moving into slide 8, here we are measuring our performance in terms of percentage of active projects monitored in terms of concurrence. So here is where we are checking whether have we executed the project in terms of what the concurrence was said in terms of figures and also the project implementation phases. So in quarter 1, our target was that we're going to monitor 100% of all our projects, and also in quarter 2. And yes, we are saying in quarter 1 and in quarter 2, we have monitored those projects for compliance and for in terms of concurrence received. And the second indicator is on the percentage of project oversight report for active projects. So here is where we'll usually be disbursing funds, so we need to monitor and get detailed reports. So we say in quarter 1 we had anticipated 100% and in quarter 200%, and indeed we have achieved it in quarter 1 and quarter 2. Though in the first slide I was highlighting that in quarter 1, because of the lockdown regulations, we had to involve more use of our missions abroad instead of the ARF secretariat traveling to the recipient countries because of the lockdown restrictions. Honorable members, now I will be moving to slide 9, which is our financial reporting. Just to highlight that for the year 2020-2021, we have received 47 million from the National Treasury, and we have continued to incur interest on our Reserve Bank account of 17 million. And our local and foreign aid assistance, these are projects that were concurred and that met the criteria to be classified as expenditure according to our accounting principles of 134 million. And we, just to correct, for the first 30 September, we actually made a loss of 69 million. I think just to highlight it and to explain it, though our statement of financial position show a loss, it's mainly because most of the projects that we funded were from the previous surplus from the previous year. So on the 31st of May, we had to write to National Treasury to request to retain certain surpluses, especially mainly because of the pandemic. So we were approved to retain the funds. So though it raises a loss in our statement of financial performance, but we had available funds to cater for those projects. And we are highlighting our cash and cash, which is our balance in the bank of 847. This balance includes all the amounts that are committed for projects that are waiting for disbursements, and it's mainly because we are still waiting for certain processes to unfold before we can pay the money over. And we have our receivables of 27 million, and just to explain that we gave on this receivables, what happens is that when we are, the department does payments on our behalf, so what happens is that we transfer the money to the department and the cutoff for the quarter happened and they only disperse it 20 million now, it's a bit lesser. So we are saying as at 30 September 2020, the African Renaissance had an available funds of 10.7 million that they could commit to new projects. I thank you.
At the end, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, DG and the team, for the good presentation. I will now open the floor to the honorable members, but before I do that, can I just switch this because it affects my connectivity, the camera. Before I do that, I would request honorable Nkosi to read the opening remarks of the chair, because when I read them earlier on, I was using my phone, and it could not capture the whole opening remarks. It only captured the first page, because it's very much important, that opening remarks, because it's also talking to some of the issues that we have raised, and it's interrogating some of the areas. So I think for the benefit of all of us, so that when we engage, then we'll engage on the basis of the presentation and also things that are also in the opening remarks of the chair. Ms. Honorable Nkosi, can you please do that for me, because I'm disadvantaged this side, so I can't read the whole thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are. Thank you, Chair, for...
Okay, that we can see your mouth. You can't see your own face.
Can you see me?
Yeah. No, you're fine. Person. You like your new look.
thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to all of the members. Chair, I will start where I think you ended and not read the whole remarks. The Chairperson, in his address and opening remarks, also says, as a non-permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, South Africa is regarded as having worked hard to show its refined positions and advise its interventions as an African team member. This is an area of priority too for the community to hear how the department performed during its term in the United Nations Security Council. We further congratulate South Africa for its membership to the World Logistics Expert, a meta-policy initiative established to increase trading opportunities between emerging markets. The WLP program is also closely aligned with the South African National Development Plan 2030, particularly in terms of increasing intra-regional trade and improving trade penetration into fast-growing markets in Asia and Latin America. South Africa is a member with India, Indonesia, Colombia, Senegal, Kazakhstan, Brazil, Uruguay, and the UAE in a class of trading nations sharing expertise to smooth trade flows around the world. We have also noted a number of international developments ranging from elections in the continent, elections in the US, Brexit, developments in Libya and Romania. We will make time for dedicated briefings on those items in due course. Honorable Minister, you were left with dismay when the local and international media reported that some diplomats refused to come back home at the end of their tour of duty, which is 4 years. What are the circumstances that led to these cases, and how have they been resolved? What plans are in place to ensure that similar situations do not occur? it is circumstances like these that warrant the urgent promulgation of the Federal Services Act 2019. We are also aware that the first and second quarters are being presented on the basis of the new approach to the Department's service delivery targets and accounting to Parliament. There are areas below, Honourable Minister, which the committee needs clear answers on. The gap analysis on building institutional capacity to deliver the AU-UN languages were supposed to achieve in better one, but only achieved in better two. South Africa's diplomats must be capacitated with knowledge of foreign languages to enhance their work abroad. We have stressed this today of such an important exercise, which is the building block to the implementation of the Foreign Services Act. Consultations on the formulation of code directives and regulations were also planned for better one. Why was this important process not accomplished as planned? Is the department aware that the entering into force of this act will unlock the many administrative challenges facing the department today? We have sought to use the same target of work streams charged with drafting these codes, directives, regulations have not been completed. This is a serious matter, Honourable Minister, especially because the department has made an undertaking before this committee that the Act will be enforceable from the 1st of April 2021. Many aspects of the department's work, like the property management, accounting processes in the missions, misconduct and others, all depend on an Act that has entered, that has been entered into force. Is the department expecting to accomplish this important target by the end of the year? The review of structural bilateral relations, SGPs, was supposed to be completed in quarter two. It has not. The question is and remains why. The importance of these bilateral agreements as vehicles of ensuring that foreign policy is aligned to address domestic challenges cannot be overemphasized. A review would ensure we prioritize those that respond to the NPP. A review of South Africa's current international multilateral membership to determine the strategic value and which membership to pursue has also planned for quarter one. This exercise was not achieved, which means there is no assessment of the right value versus membership fees. Why has this not been achieved as planned? Honourable Minister, there are some serious pointers to the fact that some of the challenges in achieving set targets are due to the fact that there are no tools of trade like computers, laptops, to enable people to work remotely. This department collapsed ICT system cannot be left unattended perpetually. This particular department cannot afford being left behind the first industrial revolution. Therefore, needs to embrace the new normal and achieve targets even when working from home. Madam Minister, I had to itemize the above issues so that in response to questions from members later, you can also address them. The chairperson says, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi, on behalf of the chairperson, for reading those opening remarks, which we somehow could not have read earlier on. In terms of the hand that I see before me, it's your hand, Honorable Nkosi, before I ask you to read, followed by Honorable Beckman, followed by Honorable Fafa, followed by Honorable Msani, followed by Reverend. But there is something
I raise my hand, Chair.
Okay, yes, so but with the last. Are there any other hand? Or maybe we go for the second round if there are no hands there after that. But I just want to clear something before I allow the hand. Honorable Beckman, when you came in and you introduced Honorable Father, and you said that he is replacing
charity. Now, I think we need to clarify that issue in terms of procedures. I don't think it's a replacement. When someone is not in a meeting, it's an apology, you can't be replaced. And if it's a permanent replacement, they are forcing procedures, parliamentary procedures that you have to follow. So, Honorable Faber is allowed to come and attend the meeting like any other honorable member that can come from any political party to attend the meeting. He can also participate, except only when we are voting, which I don't think will come to the stage. So I want to say that I must correct the two arguments. If we don't correct it, then it will turn such a wrong precedent in the future. When someone who's a permanent member has forwarded an apology, it's an apology. That's it. It's not replaced by any other honorable, but honorable members, they can come and attend the meetings of the committee because they are allowed to do so. So I felt that we clarify that one. Honorable Kosi, followed by that man, followed by Honorable Faber, followed by Honorable Mushur, followed by Honorable Swart, in that order. Over to you, Honorable Ngozi.
Thank you, Chairperson, thank you, members of the committee. And just to face my questions, I think, DG, we are certainly meeting in the post-Trump era, an era that was characterized by the disruption of international relations. I would like to hear where the department approach would be to the new administration in the U.S., particularly taking into consideration that we have not had so good a relationship with the Trump administration, and how are we going to repair and restore our relationship with the United States of America going forward. Secondly, the approach by the GPAP that targets that are not achieved in one quarter may be moved even further is welcomed, and in fact is the correct response to the new normal that we are facing. However, the problem is with one, where you have targets that are moved from quarter to quarter generally because of the COVID situation, that's correct. But where it will be due to lack of performance, it is possible that non-performing managers or non-performing personnel may actually shift targets. And cumulative in quarter four and in preparation for other reports, you will have difficulty accounting for non-performance because this will also be hidden on the pretext or on the excuse that DPME said it can move quarters. So management, particularly yourself, DG, must make sure that those performance targets that are achievable and that must be achieved should be done. The second question, Chair, is in relation to the legal opinions offered. I hear the presentation where it says there is this is a responsive target, and I acknowledge the confidentiality of some of these. However, Chair, it is tried that in the past we have had situations where legal opinions relate to misconduct in the missions. I would like this to be disclosed as far as possible. When there is no non-disclosure, explanation must be given per decision to say this decision in relation to this bilateral agreement cannot be disclosed for this reason, so that it must be based on policy and, if possible, on law, rather than the choice of managers whether to disclose or not to disclose. The third issue, Chair, relates to the issue of the promulgation of the acts. I think we are April 2 months and about 2 weeks from the 1st of April, in a month, from the 1st of April. I think we need a bit of an explanation why we can't have this act operationalized by 2021 April, barring COVID-related excuses or reasons. It is important that aspects of this act must come into operation because most of the issues that are relating to nurturing this teaching will be resolved once this becomes an act and everybody knows that we act according to the law that is governing us as a department, including other laws of the country and the constitution. The first one is around developments in Myanmar. I note that the minister is not here, but the other political principles are here. To what extent are we, as a country, involved in monitoring the situation from the side and basing directly? Well, I've noted that the former honorable member, Bruce Mayer, is actually engaged directly in ensuring that there is peace. Building peace using the South African experience in that situation. What is the department saying with regard to that? And my last question, which is the first, is related to the ARF and COVID intervention. Chair, we have seen the massive abuse, maladministration, and total disregard of COVID disaster management rules to procure vaccines, etc., in all departments. What measures are you at the DG taking to ensure that we don't pay to that, particularly in relation to how we transfer funds and assist in the continent in this regard? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ukosi. Let me read the list again. It's Batman now, Faba, Shriu, Sane, and Swaz. In that order. Honorable Batman.
Yeah, thanks very much. And just to clarify, as you said, Honorable Chetty is still the permanent member, and Honorable Faba is just the alternate. So yes, correct, Lisa. I was just, as a matter of courtesy, introducing Honorable Faba. From the outset, I'd like to just say that we seem to have lost ground in terms of what DOCO is doing on the international scene for the COVID, both repatriation and rescue efforts. It seems that Home Affairs seems to be doing, well, they seem to have the challenges obviously with issuing the passports and the travel documents, which is their job, but then there's net joints. And that joint seems to be taking the decisions. Now, there's the introduction of the Border Management Unit, the Border Management Authority, which is coming into play, which is almost, besides looking after the missions, it's almost like we've got three chiefs in the... We've got our own two bulls in the crawl, but now we're going to have three chiefs in the international on the international stage. We're going to have the net joints, we're going to have Home Affairs, and we're going to have DOCO. And we're all going to be chiefs at saying what we should all be doing. And it's going to be quite a harsh situation because who has the final order here? You know, because we're sitting with a situation, let's say, with the Zimbabwean army now that is not saying who should be coming in and who should be in terms of rescue efforts in the border. Now, we know a year ago in Mozambique, we had that horrible incident on the border with the shooting. This is going to happen again. This possibly, potentially can happen again. Now, the communication has to go between Net Joints, Home Affairs, and DOCO. Now, we're going to have to have a serious sit-down and say who's responsible for what, because we've seen what it's like between Public Works and international relations when there's two ministers trying to take responsibility for the same functions. You just have to go to Namibia and see what it's right to be in charge of the actual missions and who's responsible for the missions. And this stealing of power here is going to become problematic. It's very early days now, and we've got the excuse of COVID. But come Border Management Authority, I can assure you that this monster called NatJoints, which everyone, you know, no one really oversights, I can guarantee you that we're going to hear a lot more of. So I would really like to say, and from our side, from the Turco side, international relations side, is that we should start getting some presentations from Turco as to what NatJoints actually does, where Turco fits into NatJoints, and what decisions they're actually responsible for. Then in the presentation we made, there was a bit of comments around the African Union, about SADC, a little bit of the UN Security Council. We've been talking about how much money we put into it. We had great fanfare about the fact that we're going to take up the chairmanship. The task on the president, I think, was always going to be problematic, you know, for him to be the president of a country, for him then to be the chairman of the AU at the same time, and to then monitor what was going on in the UN, and then to be a head of state at SADC at a time when, you know, Mozambique's where it is at this stage, and the other situations that have taken place in SADC at this point in time, is a tall ask, let alone COVID coming up at the same time. Now we've got a situation where a lot of leaders, African leaders during COVID, you look at Uganda, you look at Tanzania, a lot of them used COVID to usurp their power during elections. And we've seen some blind eyes turned against a lot of the situations where election monitoring was probably needed and a loud voice in the African Union was probably needed. But before we pat ourselves on the back, I think what we need is maybe a presentation as to just how successful were we under the African Union leadership, and how successful we were under the UN leadership, and maybe also through the SADC, through our serving the law study. But why I say that is not to be destructive or critical, but rather to say that we've got deputy presidents that are currently serving that may not be doing much. We've got ex-presidents and ex-deputy presidents, you know, someone like President Khalema Motlanthe comes to mind, that could serve as proxies to the president. They could actually, possibly we could recommend that they take up a permanent seat in the African Union at the time that our seat comes up, and maybe become a proxy for the president and do the duty of the president. So I'd like to propose, please, that we actually have, as soon as possible, we get a report back as to just what we did successfully in that chair, and maybe what we need to still do. You know, something that comes to mind is, I think I would have liked to have seen the minister land the Egypt, Sudan and Ethiopian issue. I think it's something that we really could still land. I'm hoping that we still could, because I really do believe the minister was the person that would have been the most capable to get those three countries around the table and to install a bit of diplomacy around that. And I really do believe when it comes to terrorism coming into the southern tips of South Africa, to Southern Africa, we have the right people. You know, I just look at our speaker, Thandi Mothiso, and I think that we should be forming a task group with our expertise in South Africa and our expertise in SADC, and we could make some, you know, we could make some really important productive points to assist. Not saying that Mozambique necessarily wants South Africa's help, but maybe there's something that we can do to offer some form of assistance. Then, during December, a horrible thing came to... I asked questions around, stemming from the Los Angeles situation, I asked questions around the leases, and now the CFO mentioned it here. we ask questions around how much of the rent comes back once the Consulate Generals vacate those properties that we rent from. And it was an astonishing figure that came back. It was almost 10 million rand that we've lost because of the conditions we leave those premises. Now, I'd like to find out from the DG or the CFO, do we claim it back from the diplomat? And have they not signed something to say that if they destroy those houses or they leave those houses in a bad condition or they've damaged property, do they not pay back that damage? Why should the ratepayers, the citizens, have to pay for the damage that the diplomats have caused? And if they have not signed something like that, when will we institute something for them to actually sign and pay back what they've caused, the damage that they've caused? And then lastly, our IT systems, we've been talking about the fact that our IT systems are outdated. We've been talking about the fact that we're going to tender on the IT systems and upgrade the IT systems. But again, questions put through to the minister have left me very uncomfortable with the fact that with the timing of our state security and the timing of our conditions abroad, we're in a very compromised situation. And my colleague brought up the Trump era. There's far worse than the Trump era. There's people that are very interested in what South Africa is doing because South Africa is very vulnerable. And if you're overseas as a diplomat and you've got compromised systems in your mission, and your systems aren't very secretive or very easy to monitor, how do you get information passed from the mission back to South Africa? It's almost as if you don't really. It's almost as if you shouldn't really have the mission because there's not much you can really do. So I would just like to say that I think that we've left ourselves very compromised, and we've left ourselves with a third of what the mission is supposed to be doing is actually can't be doing because it's actually left compromised. So the tender for the IT system, I would put that as a priority very shortly. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Honourable Beckman. Honourable Nkosi, Mshewu, and Swart, can you lower your hand? And then over to you, Honourable Farmers.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks also for introducing me on this committee. I've served on the Select Committee for International Relations in the NCOP for 7 years and a term and a half previously. It's absolutely a pleasure for me to be alternative on this committee, and all the best for you as well through this year. I just need some clarity on the ARF funding, on the African Renaissance Fund. I see that it is obviously for the assistance of African countries, but I also saw that on page 10 that there was a loan to Cuba of 150 million. If I can just get clarity on that. Thank you, Chair. That will be all for now.
Okay, that was sweet and short. Thanks very much, Honorable Father. Honorable Chiu, Margaret.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'll also be as short and sweet as Honourable Faber. My first short question is which legal services we were told are confidential? If members of the committee need information from the department, is there any legal service that has been offered that can be withheld from the committee? And if not, what are the legal services that are confidential? And secondly, we hear that South Africa does not have sufficient coins to compete for the position of the executive sector at the executive management of SADC. My question on that is how do they work out this point system and Africans do we have currently, and how many would we need to have the right to compete for the position of the executive secretary? And thirdly, now the implementation of the Declaration on Silencing of Guns has been extended to 2030. Now my question, are the reasons behind this extension? Could there be failures and challenges that cannot be resolved to require another 10 years? And can we know what they are? And secondly, is Mozambique part of the countries where this declaration of silence of guns is expected, and what has happened so far, because it is very quiet about what's happening in Mozambique, and families and friends that are in that country are talking about the guns, the noise of the guns all the time. So is there any individual or a group of people that we can approach if we want the latest information about Mozambique and whether any progress is being made when it comes to silencing the guns there? And the last one has to do with the humanitarian assistance given by the African Renaissance. Now, more than 288 million rand has been allocated for provision of PPEs to 21 African countries. Now, which are these countries, and what is the breakdown of the allocations per country? And also on this one, what accountability measures are in place? As we know that in South Africa, we have had a lot of scandals, corruption regarding PPEs. How do we know that the South Africa is not throwing money in the bottomless pit when it comes to PPEs? And whether reports of what those countries have done with this money that has been provided by South Africa will be made available. Reports of expenditure to ensure that there is also accountability outside South Africa when it comes to PPEs, because we expect accountability in our country as it is taxpayers' money that is providing this money. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Reverend. That was short, but not sweet. The next one is welcome, Deputy Minister Alvin Borders. Every time I want to greet you and introduce you, you disappear, so we are a moving target. But I'm sure you know the language we use, a moving target. But thanks very much for being with us, and we really appreciate it. And then the next speaker is the Honorable Musani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was really hoping that this committee will be very honest, especially when it comes to our tenure as the AU chair, which we have just handed over. To mention only successes, we are not doing justice, Chairperson. And to only mention successes, we are not doing justice to the future, we are not doing justice to this committee, we are not doing justice to ourselves. We have to acknowledge that our tenure, as difficult as we might want to make it seem, was a total dismal failure, Chairperson. We note that under the theme of silencing the guns, there was a rise in militant Islamist insurgencies, which is estimated at about 43% in the continent, Chair, which nothing has been done about it. If anything has been done, it's very minimal. And we also note the silence, Chairperson, that was heard by the people of the African continent when they had made numerous cries to the AU regarding the human rights disputes, especially by their own government. And the AU kept silent about these issues, with the recent one being that of Uganda, and also the instability that is happening in Lake Chad. And to put a cherry on top of everything, Chairperson, the 34th summit, AU summit, which just recently took place, I mean, for it came across as very undemocratic for someone such as Mr. Faki to be reinstated uncontested with all his failures and get an approval of a third of support from the member states. Really, honestly, it just puts a rubber stamp on everything that clearly we do not expect any democracy to happen in the African continent. It sets a very bad precedent. It will never change. It means as the African continent, we must just accept that that is how our leaders will be elected moving forward. And also we note, Chairperson, that the representation of female candidates was a dismal failure in the 34th AU summit, Chairperson. And let's appreciate the commencement of the African Continental Free Trade in January. It is a step in the right direction, and we only hope that we will not become a dumping site as the African continent, and it will increase our manufacturing capacity as the African continent and our member states. Chairperson, we have not heard anything with regards to our presidential seat as the UNSC, at the UNSC in December. I don't know what progress South Africa has made or what have they set the ball to be rolling in our presidency at the UNSC in December. So what programs have been put in place? What achievements have we had for that 1 month that we had the presidency at the UNSC? And also there are mentions in the presentation, Chairperson, that speak to us negotiating with Europeans and the North with regards to agriculture, wine, automotive businesses. But I did not hear anything, Chairperson, regarding infrastructure, especially in programs such as the PIDA. The PIDA program has a lot of funds and has a lot of foreign investors. What is South Africa doing? How are we participating in the program for infrastructure development in Africa? Because the PIDA Week also highlighted a few of important projects which will need to take place for the African Continental Free Trade to be a success. So what role is South Africa playing? What is the department doing in that regard in order for us to participate fully in the PIDA program? And then, Chairperson, the presentation also highlights the AU-EU agreement, which the meeting has not taken place. I want to know what will happen once this AU-EU agreement gets in place. What will happen to the SADC-EU? Those agreements, how will they be adjusted? Will they remain regional, or the whole African continent will have to then cancel all these SADC-EU agreements and move into one agreement? Chairperson, can we be taken through on how far is SADC and South Africa on its own with regard to the protocols for free movement? Because we believe that the African Continental Free Trade Agreement must go hand in hand with the free movement of the African people. And we note that in 2019 November, there has only been 4 countries which had acceded to this treaty. And it becomes a problem when South Africa had issues and SADC had issues with regards to the presentation of this protocol. But we don't hear where do we stand currently. Because it is of vital importance, Chairperson, that the people of the African continent get free movement. The African passport was launched in 2016. implemented in 2019. But to date, we are not hearing anything, and we know that only 4 countries have ratified the protocol of free movement. Chairperson, this committee once raised an issue of international treaties being signed, and we are not being brought abreast to what is happening. Noting recently the one that was acceded to by South Africa of the nuclear weapons. This committee is one of the committees that needs to monitor the peacekeeping mission. And committees such as the minerals, committees such as trade and industry, committees such as the justice committee, are acceding to treaties which affect this committee. However, we are not brought in to find out what are the impacts that these treaties are going to have with regards to us monitoring the international relations. Because as we sit here today in this committee, I am sure that the nuclear weapon treaty that was signed by the minerals committee does not stand to benefit the South African continent when we look at it from the international relations point of view. Because the owners of the nuclear weapons have not signed the treaty, so it becomes a null and void treaty, which I think if it was brought also to this committee, we would have had our own input before it even goes to the National Assembly. So how are we planning on getting these treaties that are signed in isolation from the International Relations Committee treaty to be incorporated into our committee so that we also have a voice and also have monitoring tools to assess how these treaties affect us as an International Relations Committee. Chairperson, in Program 3, this department was supposed to do a multilateral membership analysis. I have just one question when it comes to that, because we know that objective was not met. My question is, as South Africa, what do we still stand to benefit as being members of the Commonwealth? Chairperson, there has been a lot of issues of students that are stuck abroad with their fees not being paid, with repatriation issues, and this comes back to this committee and this department. And we know that it's not the capacity of this department, but at the end of the day, it has to do with relations of where these students are stuck. For example, the latest being that in Portugal, and it's found out that it is a province of Free State that has done a blunder with the student fees. Previous year, it was the students of Russia, which needed to be repatriated, and we found out that it was the province of Mpumalanga that did not want to repatriate the students. No one wants to take responsibility, and then the responsibility ultimately lies with Durko. So how does Durko intend to prevent these issues from moving forward? Because these provinces send out students abroad, sometimes with or without the knowledge of Durko, and then at the end of the day, Durko must take responsibility for everything that is happening abroad because it is about international relations. So how does Durko intend to prevent such things from happening? Because today it's Free State, next day it will be another province doing the same thing, leaving our students stranded in international countries. And then my last question, Chairperson, we requested for a list of positions that are occupied by South Africans on international bodies. Have we received that list? And if not, when are we going to receive the list? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stanley. Honorable Swartz, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my comment I would like to make is on the ARF list. I take note that the ARF is performing well and has consistently had a clean audit. However, I'm concerned about the fact that the IRF depends on the Department for Procurement Services
And it is well known that the department's supply chain management is the most inefficient and has led to irregular expenditure in most instances of the department. Why is the department not considering building capacity within the ARS as a period to conduct its own procurement and also to improve on the turnaround times for procurement? I'm saying this, Chair, because it has taken about 3 years since the AGI disaster for the department to even start talking about implementation of humanitarian assistance to the affected countries due to delays in procurement processes of the department's supply chain management. If the Secretariat is strengthened sufficiently, it will form a good base for them to transition to SAPTA. Why should we not think that some of the good performance of this fund, which will later be affected by the influences and inefficiencies of the department's financial management department? So we've been singing a song about the ARF and moving away from this supply chain management, in fact from the finance department, because I've said it before that legally they perform different work. Why should the ARF be under finance and not the department taking the stance to implement what we've been saying, that SAPTA should come to a realization and it should be there? And then on the programs 2, 3 and 4, Chair, I appreciate that the department is now starting to report on the outcomes and impacts of your foreign policy mandate, rather than just reporting on activities, for example, where you were reporting on events, how many meetings, and not sharing with us what you are doing, and to start planning how you are going to report and adapt to this new reporting mechanism. What measures are you putting in place to ensure and adapt to the reporting requirements, which will give us a full picture on our foreign policy delivery? For example, Chair, we are reading in the media that South Africa came up with nothing at the AU Commission elections. In the future, the committee is requesting that the department should let us know how it lobbies for its candidates in the region and also to international organizations, how do they strategize and how the whole process runs, so that South African citizens are not also equally confused by the media. If you improve on your reporting, it will assist the committee, as South Africa is part of SADC. For example, we know that a certain number of candidates and others who are not following some parts of certain countries. So subsequent ones from South Africa will no longer be eligible. So the battle is lost within the region and not necessarily at the A group. This may not be known. So South Africans need to be assisted by us as well as the committee. So first of all, us as the committee must get the correct information in order for us to assist the general public.
What's happening now?
I don't know, Chair. Somebody else was talking.
Okay, can you all of us unmute our mics, please?
Chair, I was just rounding off by saying that the committee needs to have proper information from the department in order for us to also assist the general public that depends on the media for information. Because now it will look into the general public that we have lost out completely at the AU, whereas not understanding that we are part of SADC, and also how the elections are conducted and how the process is followed alphabetically. And therefore I am saying we need to be given by the department a clear picture on what happened when they lobbied the regions and other international organizations, so that we cannot end up with what we have seen now, and equally then it becomes even more distorted to the general public that does not really understand how the process is carried out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Swart. Before I give the department and the deputy minister to respond, is there any other honorable member who wants to say something, question or input? Because I'm not going to give a second bite once the department and the ministers are responding. I'll only take questions which will be issues where questions have not been answered, follow-ups, but no any other input and questions. So we all covered.
Honorable Chair, thank you for creating the space. I did have my hand up.
Yes, Honorable Henrik, welcome and compliments. It's nice to see you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. It has become quite clear that South Africa is losing our influence in the important structures in Africa. We heard that at the AU no one was elected, that we are not in a position to even compete for a secretarial position in SADC. And so we need to re-establish, Honorable Chair, South Africa's interest in the African Renaissance. I think that we still have some leverage there. I know President Thabo Mbeki wanted to build the African Parliament in District 6, which was the hub of the resistance in the 60s and 70s. And I would like to know if that has been abandoned. Honorable Chair, 70% of Africa practice the Islamic faith, so it is very hurtful to hear derogative terms like Islamic insurgency. While we know that the entire Muslim world is in the forefront to combat terrorism and insurgency. We also hear references to Mozambique, that it is Islamists that are creating the havoc, whereas we know it's monopoly capitalism. And but I just want to make a point that honorable members must find other terms to describe insurgencies. We don't hear about Christian insurgencies, about Jewish insurgencies, but it's very hurtful this time to hear about Islamic insurgency from members of the department and our honorable members as well. Thank you very much, honorable chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Henry. Are there any other members? Honorable Henry, you can lower your hand now. So it means that all of us, we are covered. I'm covered in my opening remarks. There's quite a number of issues that is raised there. And I will expect the DG and the team and the two deputy ministers to respond to those issues as well, and also the issues that have been raised by other honorable members. I don't know, let me start with you, DG. You will decide whether you want to hand it over to your principal first, or you want to lead in answering with your team, and then the deputy ministers will come after. So it's up to DG as to how we are going to structure your response and the comments or inputs as a department and the ministry.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Protocol will dictate otherwise. Since my bosses have not had opportunities to make some overviews, I would have wished to, not necessarily for them to answer, to say, but to give us to provide whatever they might be wishing to do ahead of us, so that we can go straight to the questions. Now that's a preference, but it will depend on how it is. We haven't spoken, but I would have really felt that they will usher into the whole set of questions, and then we'll take the baton from there.
I am persuaded by your motivation, and I think it's a proper one. And I think let us start with the deputy minister. Can I start with the deputy minister, Mashekho Dlamini? Just whatever you want to say, deputy minister. Not necessarily responding, but if you want to respond, it's also fine.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My greetings to the honorable members and the officials that have joined us. Thank you for the opportunity to say something. I don't have much to say, Chairperson, but just to say that we're blessing to all the questions that have been posed by the members. But some of the issues were not part of the quarter report. So they will bear with us, because some of the issues are the issues that happened in the third quarter. So we'll really make sure that we'll give full details of what they want us to get, because as it stands now, we're presenting the first and the second quarter of our performance. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Mashekho Dlamini. I think that is very much helpful, and we will follow the cue that you are suggesting. And Honorable Deputy Minister Rogers?
Yes. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think what is of, for me, what is of substantive importance is what the PCF raised, that we must at all costs be executive to ensure that the APPs, and in particular your quarterly targets, we are supposed to adhere to implementation to the extent that in which we can, and not necessarily have the pandemic at all costs to be blamed for us not meeting the this target. And I think we would of course take that here, because at the general level, that is also from the side of the creditor that we have always raised and have become concerned about that. Ultimately, our issue is to advance the national interest of South Africa, notwithstanding some of the very pertinent multi and transnational challenges that we face with. The second issue, Carlo, that I thought broadly we must look at, that there is a plethora of issues that members of PTF raise that at a detailed level does not necessarily form part of the ARF report. But I think what we must then do to give us a responsibility, for example, to present at a more detailed level our tenureship as the African Union, our tenureship also as the UN Security Council, and more significantly, I think what peace members have raised is that the significant role of assessing our contribution as South Africa at a multilateral level, because that is key in regards to what members of the peace have raised. And that, of course, will include the Jefferson, even the issues of balancing of the guns at the detail level. What is the subjective weakness which our tenure at the level of AU actually has been confronted with, and also at the level of the U.S. Security Council. So I thought I must just amplify those matters, because I think those are issues that came upfront to the attention of the PC members, and I think it will require that we have a follow-up session, Chair, with your indulgence, so that we as a subsequent level will be able to make that type of a contribution. Ngiyabonga kakhulu.
Ngiyabonga kakhulu, Sibongile Ngqongqoshe. I think we are correct. I think we need a session as a committee, maybe not dealing exactly with the briefing in terms of the performance, the APP, maybe to engage on those issues, because they are a little bit political in nature. And I think you as the executive, you will have to maybe formulate something in response to what has been raised by members of the committee. But maybe we cannot be able to do that in this session. Thanks very much, Deputy Minister Voges. And then, coming back to you, DG, can you now lead us with your team in responding to the issues that the Honourable Members have raised?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and Honourable Deputy Ministers and my colleagues. Indeed, we've taken note of the many questions, but very pertinent and important. Perhaps in my start, colleagues in a different units, etc., probably they've taken very specific questions, we'll come to that. But when the chair and later the other honorable chair and the other member read the remarks, I had to take some few notes. I may have taken them wrongly, and I wish to start exactly there, because when I was hearing them, there was like a sequence on the quarterly report that we are presenting here. I must indicate that this is a period from April to September, and due to well-known circumstances, we could not present quarter by quarter. Essentially, we should have presented quarter one somewhere in July or August, and quarter two somewhere in October or November. But we really appreciate that as its first sitting, the committee, the Honorable Committee, realized this backlog. And some of the things we say might look like they are overtaken by events, but they are aspects under in their period under review, and therefore they represent answers as at that time, and some may have been overtaken. what I picked up from the chair, honorable chair, and what other honorable members have indicated, relating to achievement of targets, and we did hear the concerns. For example, if I picked it up well, it was even specific regarding gap analysis on building institutional capacity to deliver the UN languages, which we acknowledge that it was not achieved in the period and under which it was falling. And obviously, without making an excuse, since we were just learning how to work remotely, and this would need a real desktop as well as a deep analysis, which will then give us information. And colleagues, honorable members will realize that our colleague has indicated, as she was presenting, that she presented before, which was brought to attention, that while that was not done then, it was subsequently done. But its purpose is to ensure that at the end of the year, we should be able to have developed this capacity. We would like to assure the Honorable Committee that we would definitely, in subsequent reporting, and maybe the third quarter reporting, we should arrest it. It ended up on the 31st December, and it is reportable from the 15th of January, and maybe it should come soon so that we can take over all the lost time and put it in perspective, so that what we report to the Honorable Committee is as current as possible. We also noted that the Honorable Committee raises a matter about the delay in the work regarding our plan for bringing the Act into force. It's the Honorable Committee will recall, we did undertake that at some point we would have to make a presentation after internal processes shall have been done, because this is the Act that belongs to the committee, and the department is to answer on what is happening. We should indicate that we are working hard. As tomorrow we are having a meeting, before our meeting that is chaired by the minister, in which we will be presenting the actual process, which will determine the readiness or otherwise that we should be targeting. And the question would be, do we implement the Act in its entirety, or as usual, most will do, in terms of various clauses that are there. So these are some of the things that the different work streams are working hard on. And it's one of the presentations that, on our own project plan, there is to be a presentation to the committee, so that the Honorable Committee can see what we said we will do. We are mindful of the pending undertaking, and we will definitely be sharing this information. We wish that this time would be sooner, so that we can be giving the Honorable Committee progress in this respect. There was another reference to which came out in the statement that I may have maybe not picked up well, but it was to do with the review of our structured bilateral mechanisms, which we undertook to complete in quarter two, and which we say we have not been able, and the question was why. As we say, we have a total of 139, and we they are spread across all of the regions and done by different branches, land branches. Of course, we cannot blame any circumstances, but we realize we have been very ambitious in trying to finish them then, despite the other impediments, because it's a country-to-country, level-to-level. When we say we have a BNC with this country and it meets every year, how do we honor those in a year when we have so many of them, etc.? Part of the review is about It emanates from the fact that in the past we were reporting to the committee that we have had so many high-level visits, so many this and that, and one of the honorable members towards the end did indicate that. Instead now, we want to be focused and say, these are the structured bilateral mechanisms that our review found very, very, very urgent and very that should be prioritized, and this is how we are proposing to renegotiate them in order to make sure that we honor them for the interest that we have as our country for advancement of strong bilateral cordial relations, but as well as achieving other priorities that we have. We would like to indicate that as much as we acknowledge that we could have been very ambitious in making the period short, and really it is not simply because we didn't want to do anything about them, but now that we have learned and mastered the way of working remotely as we are doing now, I think most of the things that were delayed will be fast-tracked and be more useful for the also oversight as well as for us to implement as a department. The other one was that I picked up when the statement was read was regarding international multilateral membership, and in fact two more honorable members in fact left on this as well. We really would emphasize, and I was just looking at the APP, the process that we were going to embark upon was to start a review process as well here, so that come the end of the financial year, we're able to come up with a report in which we will still come and present to the Honorable Committee to say, having done this in-depth analysis, we are of the view that this is relevant in as far as these matters of this nature are saying this, and there was a specific reference to the Commonwealth, and we should be in a position to motivate why. As of now, we are still doing that analysis, and then we of course acknowledge that during the period under review, at that time, we have not accomplished the mission about it, but it is well on course, and then when we report in future, we will do color-coded so that as we present a particular aspect, you see whether it is green, yellow meaning that it's still within reach, and red which means that it is highly unlikely to be achieved. So based on this, the very midterm review as we're doing is also informing us about adjusting and reviewing, because it has to be a review following what we have experienced, not necessarily to change things to suit us, but based on practice. And we believe we will be able to respond appropriately, and then we'll report even more appropriately about this. And as I said at the beginning, it was to indicate without having to steal the other time beyond this, that at that time this was the situation. The one that relates to the concern, and which several honorable members raised, relates to the ICT in the department. And if we recall on our APP, one of our annual targets, which is what we should have done at the end of the year, is that we should have a digital transformation that will enable us to be alive to the responsibilities that are relevant for us in this extent. And I would like to report to the committee that in as far as the strategy is concerned, it has been done and it has been concluded well ahead of time. What we have done subsequent to that was to do a rollout or implementation plan, which is one of the byproducts, but related to that then is the matter of then what did we do in implementing that. First of all, it is true that we have had several delays in acquiring equipment, and equipment that we really need to be using for the purpose of conducting our work, which has become more digital, including what we are doing now. We have ensured that we fast-track the procurement process as a first shot, so that we all have tools of trade, which has had an impact in the collation of the information. But more than that, for the modernization exercise itself, that we have to follow, and most importantly, our bandwidth, which we need to, we currently are in the process of dealing with those procurements, and we hope later we'll be reporting back on how far we are in each of them. But really, honourable members, believe that as the honourable committee has been really helping us in waking us up, if I may, through its robust oversight. We believe we are moving along the way, and this presentation is the first one arising from the new ATP, as well as what should have been done then, is one part that which we believe will be a step forward. I haven't said anything about the ARS, but I'm tempted, before I hand over to other colleagues, for those specific, and I'll come back to those that they may answer. There was a concern, very serious concern, regarding the ARS and what it, how it does. Why is the department not building capacity? We are trying to build that capacity. We are mindful that the two are two separate entities, but which have a shared shared services that we work between ourselves. And as far as procurement service is concerned, indeed we are also nowadays even using a system whereby we need to have a project plan of when a particular procured service is to be done, when evaluation should be done, and we are monitoring that. We are mindful of the delays in the implementation of the post-EDAI project, but I must report that there is much progress that we are making, and I believe we will be able to report back one that would have already been taken place and the one that is taking place. We are mindful also of the fact that the Secretariat will need strengthening, of course, as a forerunner to SAPA, which is what is the destination that we are following. There was a reference about the procurement in respect of the PPE, whether this is not dumping, etc. I would like to report to the committee that what is reported here about 288 million is essentially the allocation that was approved. We would have been part of those who procured in the manner that procured, and why we have so much problems and reports and investigations. I must report to the Honourable Committee that we tried to follow procurement processes in the manner that it is prescribed to prevent irregular expenditure. And we did it. We didn't take advantage and use the emergencies. We would have already by now, we would have been sitting with us having to report to you how it happened. So it hasn't happened. The procurement hasn't taken place. It was stalled along the way because in following our procurement process in line with the PFMA and regulations, we hit the rock because we did competitive bidding. We didn't go for what has happened, that is known. And as a result, we don't pride ourselves for this delay. We're only saying we managed to prevent what honorable members fear would have happened. So we're still pursuing an option. The colleagues from finance, from the fund, etc., are working around the clock to ensure that we are going to take this matter again and see if we cannot follow the procedures that are required and do it in accordance with the applicable procurement processes. Let me not dominate here because I'll still have to lead some of the questions that came individually and perhaps hand over first to the presenter to answer specific questions and the rest of the colleagues branch by branch to come in, and if need be, I'll then take those that may have been skipped. I thank you, Honourable Chief.
Okay.
Honourable Chief, it's Dolores. I just wanted to answer the one question on SADC. There was a question in terms of why is it that South Africa does not have the fiction post? Currently what happens is every SADC member state receives a total of 100.
criteria, we've utilized 155 of the 157. So that leaves us with 2 points only, of which the deputy secretary takes 23. And according to the recruitment process, it means that South Africa cannot apply for a director post while you're in the executive, and due to the rotation, we cannot at this point apply for any of the executives. So what we have is we have the executive secretary is 30 points, the deputy is 23, where we currently have an incumbent, a director is 19. We do not have an incumbent on a director level because due to the placement and the recruitment at SADC, if a country serves as executive or deputy executive, they are not represented at director level. Then a senior officer, 16 points. We have 6 senior officers. And then officer level is 12 points and we have 3. And that is currently where we stand with our points and the utilization thereof at SADC. I just wanted to share that information. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and DJ.
DJ, let everyone in your team finish when the other one are not going to be coming in all the time.
Thank you, sir. The CFO here. We want to provide response on the question about the rental because that was asked by Maratu Bachman. Indeed, we prepared a parliamentary question response on the total we prepared and provided the information until the end of October. We do have a process in the department to complete the initiative of any cost that will arise from any action that is caused by the occupant should then be recovered from the official control. So I think the part that we're looking at is to how that we source that from a legal point in terms of the contract that we signed. So we have started the process of engaging with our legal team to then revise and put this condition so that there are no any loose ends in terms of the implementation of the recovery of the when arises. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Honourable Members. On the first question on the Act, I think there was a question that about our assistance to Cuba. So I would just like to explain that the Act says our mandate is with other countries, but particularly African countries. So we are not limited to only do work in Africa. However, because of the needs usually arising in Africa, that's why our focus is there. And just to explain the background, why we assisted Cuba was because of the issue of boosting their credit worthiness status. But it also benefits South Africa because we're giving them the loans that they are purchasing the goods in South Africa. So we are actually opening also doors for our suppliers in Cuba. So that's why the project about funding Cuba came along. And on the issue of the countries, so that are going to receive the PPE, we went through a consultative process with the Africa branch and the relevant countries. So we requested a list of countries depending on the priorities of the branch, and we went through a consultation with the countries that are inclusive, that what is it that you need. And in total, we had 10 items that, like among others, it will be your gloves, your mask. So, and the countries that we are funding is mainly your SADC countries, but among others, we will have your beginner sample there, we have your DRC, which were identified by the branch. And we went through the availability of funds that we had on 208 million. We went to the market and also to the World Health Organization and checked the prices, and we costed it. And when we did our costing, we came to a conclusion that we can afford to buy 832,000 of each item. So once the procurement is done, it will be spread across all the recipient countries. That will be the criteria that will be used. And on the issue, also just to add on what DG said about how we're monitoring our COVID-19 projects, what happens is that on projects like InfoAsca, we are now in a project where Department of Science and Technology will be assisting with the manufacturing of the vaccine. So instead, in terms of monitoring, we established a project steering committee, which we are part of as an oversight. And the department will come and present the deliverables of the project, and we will only release the funds according to what's achieved and what needs to be achieved. And we will also be doing our oversight visits. So that's how we are trying, as much as reasonable on our side, as the African Pacific Parent, to monitor that the funds are intended for what is useful. Thank you.
There was a question relating to now we go specific. May I also indicate, honorable members, that in instances where, for example, there are issues relating to our AU chairship and our member, non-permanent membership to the UN Security Council, we'd be allowed to come and make a comprehensive report back, as this is really the matter that belongs to the committee, and the committee deserves to be apprised of, so that it will come in as a special presentation. And this will take care of, among others, issues such as what honorable member on the board was mentioning about the dynamics of the elections of commissioners and what actually happened. We must appreciate that the understanding. I did see myself articles coming out questioning whether this is about our influence or not. And indeed it is dynamics, but it also means we in future will be able to have strategies relating to overcoming that. As we said, we are learning to work in what I can use, uncontact circumstances. I use this for my own understanding to me, that some dynamics that we could have overcome to communicate would have been if this would have been a contact process, etc. Well, I would be hoping that Mr. Sukla within the meeting may share a little bit on development in Myanmar. I must just comment that from Honorable Nkosi, where he spoke about the post-Trump era, and even here we do believe after incidents like this, we need to give a comprehensive, or our principals can even do that, analysis of what is coming out, what our approach is, etc. But I need to put it on record that we have a good development, because we were one of the first 18 countries that on the day of the confirmation of the Secretary of State, a telephone call was made with our minister by the new Secretary of State, and then really exchanging issues, let me put it that way, and this is setting them, resetting what could be regarded as we will be in a position to reset our relations appropriately, because in that conversation, the two principals even spoke about reviving one of the most important bilateral mechanism with the U.S., which is called strategic dialogue. It always has been there during the incumbency of the Democrats, and it's one of those things that will be revived. And the rest with that, there could be a need for us to elaborate on the matter relating to what has been asked, and I believe it will be very worthy of the Honorable Committee to hear what is going on and what we are thinking, and then what we can be advised of. The DPME approach about the carryover of targets, I must maybe correct myself, it's not necessarily that people will be allowed to postpone targets. All what it is said is that at the end, we should be accounting for every target that is in such a manner that it should not die a natural death, like in the instances of the past where it will do. Why we have had circumstances, things such as what we have now, is when we were showing that between April and September, we were moving from level 5 to level 3, or whatever, level 3, and as a result, we were not able to be together to ensure that things happen. For example, if we look at overall performance, we will put it in color-coded manner to see that we did essentially achieve most of the targets and are still achievable. But the DPSA is only facilitating for giving account on those aspects that really would potentially needed to have been carried over in much the same way that they need to be accounted for. So we will definitely, as management, will make sure that where targets are not achieved, we should make sure that we apply the normal recourse mechanisms that are applicable in such circumstances. But suffice to say, my colleagues and my team is hard at work to ensure that we don't leave anything behind. At least it was because we have had an opportunity to work on the APP, the strategic plan, and as we'll be presenting the reviewed one for APP based on the very same planning process, you will notice, honorable members, that we are taking charge of what we need to be doing and how we should do it. I did note that there was a question regarding some legal opinions being, if I got the question well, to be disclosed. I must indicate that we should distinguish between labor relations, which deals with discipline, and in which case we may have in the past said we always avoid to name people or things that can be used against us should we have a process in which a person can raise a point in the room and say, yes, my case has been decided, this was reported as such. But essentially most of the legal opinions, such as in our environment, will pertain to, we are doing international law, there will be legal opinions related to some international legal or law issues, which could be about certifying or understanding whether a particular matter can be handled in terms of international law, what should be the case, etc. There could be a variety of legal opinions based on circumstances for domestic law, but essentially where it's a case-by-case that put it out. But in instances where it is for oversight purposes, I think it should be treated as it comes, like what is it that we need to report on and what is that which we cannot report on but give you full details, etc. We will be mindful that we do not want to operate our work in such a way that we may be avoiding accountability in the name of not disclosing, but as I said, it will be on a case-by-case basis. Regarding there was a reference to we have lost ground from Honorable Bergman about COVID and repatriation and the issues on not joining the DHA and DERCO. Yeah, this is a difficult question, but I need to indicate that DERCO is part of the Joins, so is Home Affairs. And indeed there are work streams, such as the one that was referred to. And during repatriation and evacuation, we were dealing mostly on those aspects that related to travel restrictions and exceptions. I must assure Honorable Member that there is, as far as we are concerned, not really much of a problem regarding. There could, however, be an instance where, due to the tedious responsiveness may be affected by a matter that needs to be, it's essentially a Home Affairs matter, but as all members will understand that, we have missions in all these countries, but there is a Home Affairs function performed in our mission, purely Home Affairs function, but it is within our mission, because our mission represents us as a country, and that matter is processing our mission, but it is an immigration or a civic matter, in which case there it has to satisfy all the requirements of Home Affairs for it to be implemented. We will take this matter to look at what is that which could have frustrated the Honourable Member, which we need to sit down with this player to ensure that we take stock, because there could be other things that are maybe missing, which indeed could be looked at as problems, and therefore creating an agendas and monster. We will definitely engage our fellow partners, but I will not comment on the PMA Program Management Authority, as this is a very completely different structure that deals with border management issues. But the border and travel restriction work stream, and most of these work streams have since been ceased to exist because we've moved into a different array of this work. Mostly NAT20 currently is dealing with all aspects of containment or the whole COVID saga. So we will in future refer this to our role players to ensure that it really doesn't come out as something that is a problem of parallel functioning, etc. In the same breath, where Honourable Member was speaking, there is referred to, I don't know if I picked it up well, tasks of the President as Chair. Fortunately, the chairship has ended, and as Head of State, we have a membership in the UN Security Council, and then indeed it was a tall order, but we are really satisfied that the President was able to execute them all, of course, under very difficult circumstances. We may not comment yet on the use of COVID to usurp power by other heads of state, but this is one of those things that during special presentation on these, we can include, or our principals can be in a position to really clearly respond to this view. Yes, Honourable Member. The CFO has responded on the question that was parliamentary question regarding damages over a period of years. We must even thank the Honourable Member for having raised that, because it has just helped us to refocus and to avoid recurrence of this by being very, very tight on ensuring that all due diligence is done. But I believe the CFO has responded to this. The question by Honourable Mishra about which legal services are confidential, I think I've covered it, and we will definitely ensure that those that could be essential for oversight purposes will be done on a case-by-case basis, except where it is determined by the very same principle I said, where perhaps it is a confidential matter that might need other processes to be shared. The issue of points were responded to, I believe, and then there is a concern about the fact that the continent has not achieved its aspiration of silencing the guns. But we should, of course, it will also be part of the presentation, because there is a way in which this is going to be monitored on a two-year basis. It's not like we wait until 2030, but it is one of those targets that you set based on circumstances that prevail at the time, and you realize in the process that it was having other dependencies, and we will be including it in our presentation when we deal with the reports from the AU. We've just dealt with the ARF allocation 288. It's not yet spent. There's not yet been a process. It was stalled. We had advertised openly, and it didn't go any other way, which is why we were lucky not to have been included in those that may have aired in this area. some of the comments were covered in what my principals have indicated. So I was going to invite Ambassador Suklas as the DDG for Asia and Middle East just to comment on Myanmar. And while I'm trying to check my notes to see what is that wish. And any other colleague, especially when it comes to the PIDA, the issues relating to our participation in infrastructure on the continent, and the issue of AU. Let me just give the colleagues opportunities to take those specifics while I'm marking those and I'm here. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I hand over to Ambassador Sula.
Thank you, DG. Honorable members, honorable deputy ministers, colleagues. South Africa acted quite speedily following the military coup in Myanmar on the 1st of February. We immediately released a strong press statement expressing our deep concern at the developments in Myanmar and especially the actions of the military in removing the duly elected government and the arrest of political and other leaders, especially the state councillor Aung San Suu Kyi, and we call for the immediate release and the return to constitutional democracy. Myanmar, as colleagues probably know, has been under almost 50 years of military rule during its 72 years of independence. And South Africa has been involved previously in assisting Myanmar in its transition from military rule to democracy following the 2007 coup and what was then called the Boka Revolution, where the military killed a number of peaceful protesters. They embarked on a constitutional making process, and we shared our experiences with Myanmar in terms of our own constitutional making processes. We also, through our ambassador, former ambassador Jeff Deutsch, was quite involved in sharing our own experiences from transiting from an apartheid state into a democratic state. And we also had in 2019 a delegation from Myanmar, parliamentary delegation that came here. Perhaps some honorable members will recall that visit, where they came to look at how South Africa has dealt with the reconciliation and the experiences that they could draw from our own example. So we have had a history of working with Myanmar. Rolf Meyer, through his organization in Transition Initiative, has also worked with State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi, sharing our own experiences in democracy and constitution making. We are following the developments in Myanmar very closely. We called in and demarched the Myanmar ambassador to South Africa yesterday and again expressed our ongoing concern of what is transpiring in Myanmar and urging the Myanmar government, at least the military regime, to return to constitutional democracy. Myanmar has had a difficult first democratic elections in 2015, which was won by the party of Aung San Suu Kyi. They won 75% of that vote. But according to the constitution that was adopted in 2008, 25% of the legislature seats is reserved for the military. So it's a difficult situation where the military exercises much political power in the country, but following the 2015 elections, Myanmar started making good progress in transiting towards democracy. And the past 5 years, we have seen positive developments in terms of entrenching democracy, and the fact that they scheduled elections as per the constitution for November last year, and the manner in which the Union Election Commission, the equivalent of our IEC, went about arranging the elections was very transparent and also had the support of the military regime. And the elections which took place on the 8th of November was observed by the ASEAN. ASEAN is the regional organization, Association of Southeast East Asian States, of which Myanmar is a member. They had election observers there, as well as the Carter Center from the USA had over 40 election observers. The Union Election Commission declared the elections free, fair, transparent, and as demonstrating the will of the people. The Carter Center also and the ASEAN election monitors all concurred that by and large the elections were free and fair and demonstrated the will of the people. The party of Aung San Suu Kyi, the NLD, won over 80% of the vote. So they increased the percentage of votes, and there was tension growing between the head of the military and Aung San Suu Kyi, because she started moving the country in the direction of entrenching democracy. During the almost 50 years of military rule, the military has great control over the economy, and she was losing this control and moving from a command economy to a free market economy. Secondly, she during the elections also made it clear that she would like the constitution to be revised and the percentage of the military to be reduced from 25% to 5%. All of these, of course, sent out signals that was worrying to the military in terms of them losing power. Another complicating factor was the head of the military, General Min, was due to retire in June this year. Constitutionally, he could not continue as head of the military. And the military backed the opposition party, the USDP, the Union Solidarity and Development Party. And General Min had made it clear that he intends going into politics after retirement and was fully behind the USDP. The military were of the view that the USDP will win the election. But of course, the USDP was severely defeated in this election. And that, of course, would have meant a dead end for General Min in terms of his political ambitions, as well as the waning power of the military with the entrenchment of democracy, the overwhelming vote that the NLD received, and under the leadership of Aung San Suu Kyi. So all of these played a role in the military coup, and by bringing in the military to control the government for the next year, there's no guarantee that after 12 months the military will return power to the people through a popular ballot, because in the past they have not honored the commitments and people are skeptical. So therefore, as South Africa, we have been supporting the calls by the UN Secretary General, who has sent his special envoy to meet with the military. They had the first interaction this past Friday, and we were encouraged that for the first time the United Nations Security Council was unanimous in issuing a joint statement, including all the P5 members, condemning what has transpired in Myanmar and calling on the military to return the country back to constitutional democracy and release political prisoners. You would have noticed that over the past several days there have been mass demonstrations, what is being referred to as mass civil disobedience movement, in all of the major towns apart from Naypyidaw, the capital, in Yangon and Mandalay. We have seen hundreds of thousands of people from all walks of life demonstrating against the military regime. The military has, of course, imposed a curfew. There was a temporary blackout of the internet and other social media websites that has been partially restored because of international pressure. The USA, the European Union, and the G7 have all issued strong statements, including threatening with sanctions. For South Africa, we are calling for the parties to speak directly to each other and resolve the differences. The military, the excuse the military has used for the coup is that the elections were irregular and there was fraud in the elections. But as I've indicated, international observers have indicated that the election was free and fair, and there was no sign from the military that they will prevent parliament from convening at the end of January as they were due to convene. But before parliament could convene, of course, you had the military coup. So we will continue to work with the UN and with the regional partners. As honorable members are aware, we acceded to the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation with ASEAN, so that makes us a trusted partner in ASEAN. And the prime Minister of Malaysia on Friday in a visit to Jakarta together with the President of Indonesia issued a statement expressing concern of the situation in Myanmar. They have asked that a special sitting of the foreign ministers of ASEAN be convened to look at what ASEAN can do with regard to the Myanmar situation. But of course, ASEAN has been in the past not very forthcoming, because the ASEAN Charter makes it very clear that there will be non-interference in the internal affairs of member states. And the ASEAN is also divided in terms of how they relate to the coup. In the main, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore have issued strong statements in terms of the developments there, but countries like the Philippines, Laos, Cambodia have been more measured and have not said much. And Brunei, who is the current chair of the ASEAN, is not going to be very forthcoming in terms of direct action in Myanmar. So the best hope is to support the efforts of the UN Secretary General, and I think to pressurize the military generals, the military junta, to move back to constitutional democracy and not to use any force against the demonstrators, because demonstrations, even though they have been in the hundreds of thousands, have been very peaceful and orderly. And thus far, the military has used water cannons and rubber bullets to disperse the crowds. But we have been following closely the developments there. And we hope that the intervention by the UN and other global partners will bear some pressure on the military to see reason and move the country back to constitutional democracy. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Professor Sutra. We're still on the floor, Honorable Chair. I want to invite one or two of our colleagues. We believe most of the questions are falling under the rubric of what we undertake to do. For example, there was a reference to the protocol on the free movement, which I believe an interdepartmental structure between the Home Affairs, GTIC and ourselves may need to look at the what is going on there, since the principles that were laid down by SADC as some of the things that could be taken into consideration before accession. And if Advocate Yvette too can give a comment on the reference to where some departments are, it was indicated that whether we are monitoring the accession or those areas, treaties and other stuff that fall within the for example, mention was made of GTI, mineral justice, but most importantly, the rules from the nuclear treaty. If Advocate can take the floor on this particular one, I think it may be useful. But when it comes to the students, for the Free State and Mpumalanga in Russia, indeed, we were taught lessons by, and we would really lobby the committee to ensure that South Africa, based on the lessons learned from COVID, the restrictions and the frustration, we should somehow regulate our citizen movement, travel in such a manner that there is some kind of accountability, so that when circumstances such as those that happen, we don't just discover when people are in and are in distress. As I said before, I've been talking to other counterparts, and they have certain mechanisms, legislated or otherwise, whereby at least there's a format in which they will be able to account for their citizens when they want to communicate with them. So there are advisory struggle or otherwise. We don't need to really do that in a very undemocratic way, but still, we need to have a line of sight to things like that, so that our citizens can still enjoy our consular assistance in a very predictable manner.
May I request the colleagues to quickly, without not, don't have to wait for me to call them. I might have missed some, but they can say those things that are in their areas quickly so that they don't delay the quality's time.
And a good afternoon,
Chair.
Honourable Deputy Ministers and members of the Portfolio Committee, I'm Sandhya Debit. I just want to respond as the DG requested. We are indeed monitoring all our treaty obligations. In terms of cabinet decision, also reporting to cabinet twice a year, and we are in close contact with the line department or the responsible department to ensure that we are not signing up to agreements but they not follow through with ratification. So there is such a process, it is a predictable process, and we are going to cabinet at the next cabinet meeting with the current report. So we are indeed monitoring and following up, and the DG writes on a 3-monthly basis to his counterparts, requesting the necessary information and reminding them of the agreements that we signed up to but are not ratified. The same is true for country reports. South Africa is a member of many multilateral organizations where we need to report on implementation of those international agreements, and we are also presenting to cabinet on a 2 times a year on the progress that we have made in this respect. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next one may be coming, maybe the last two are coming. There was a reference to list of positions occupied. We will have to have an offline with the secretariat. As far as we are concerned, we have submitted this. It could have, we'll just have to check. But we did, this was one of the requests or began, but where I'm seated now, I may not be very sure where is the dilemma, but we will check that to see what could be where these things are. I don't know if there's a colleague from the Africa branch with regard to the reference to using appropriate language on insurgencies, etc. We took note of that from the honourable member. And if in the event that you may have done that, we will really refrain from doing that, as it will definitely be wrong. I want to check if there are two more colleagues who have something that we skipped so that we can hand over back to the honourable chair. Going from our side. You're going and go on. Honourable chair, we might have, I'm trying to scratch my nose here. As we said, the other things would need a presentation, special presentations, and then it will answer those questions that relate to those. We hereby submit back to the Honourable Chair what the floor that was given to us. Unless my bosses can have something to.
Thanks very much, DG. I know that you cannot, with your team and the deputy ministers, exhaust everything, but there is one from my side, and I've seen two hands from Honorable Nkosi, Msani, and in there one, it was Kenneth, it was Reverend Bushuwe, Honorable. But it since disappeared, so I don't know whether he still wants to raise the issue. So I will allow those three, which is Nkosi, Msane, and Mushowe, to raise follow-up questions or concerns in terms of your responses. But on my side, come back home. Please note that one. So let's allow other members to raise issues, and then when you respond, you then include the one that I have raised. Honorable Nkosi, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a quick, I thank the DG for allowing us to have Ambassador Anil Shukla in the meeting. Since this COVID was here, from 2019 to 2020, we have not seen him in the meeting. Thank you. We just didn't see his face, but we appreciate his input.
Can you see the face? If it's possible, if it's not, it's very clear. We see the face. No, it's not the
ambassador. I'm sorry, we will agree with you on that.
Yeah. Let's see the face. Because we have not seen, we have seen
the face. The face is up there.
Where is it? There is no face in the profile.
I was present at the last portfolio committee meeting in
Now we know the face. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Then let us then proceed. Honorable Sani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have a follow-up with regard to the protocol on free movement of people. I understand the interdepartmental capacity. However, the reason why we have political heads in our meeting in the caliber of the deputy ministers is so that they can assist in addressing these issues which the portfolio committee might have. So I still see the presence of Deputy Minister Candice Mashego. If she can please give us a brief on what is happening and how far are we with regards to the protocol on free movement of people. Yes, we do note that SADC was given a responsibility to go and address issues regarding all SADC countries when it comes to the free movement of people, but this was adopted by SADC countries. Now it was a matter of having it addressed at the AU. We just want to know how far are we with this regard, and so that we need to monitor the way forward. And then, Chairperson, with regards to the students that are stuck abroad, I really don't think I understand what the DG is saying. What type of assistance does he need from us so that we prevent such issues moving forward? Because I foresee that these things will keep happening until someone is held liable for all these errors that are happening. And it might, at some instances, ruin relationships that this committee is trying to build with foreign countries. I never heard the response, Chairperson, with regards to our participation in the PIDA program. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Nsan. And you also raised on this issue of protocol on movement of people. You also raised the issue of, you've even mentioned it in the year, when you said Africa passport was adopted. So I think when the minister or even the VG, they are responding to that, they can also enlighten us as to how far the issue of issuing of African passports in relation to the movement of the people also is in terms of the process. Reverend, over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. A short follow-up question to what the DG said in responding to my question on the humanitarian assistance. They did tell us that the process has been halted, but what I want to know is these 21 countries that received allocations, what are the different breakdowns? Did they specifically ask for a certain amount, or how is the breakdown? And secondly, will they give us reports of expenditure when the money should have been spent. I would want a commitment on that. Whether we'll be given reports so that we can see breakdowns of allocations and also that the monies have been used appropriately. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mshweu. That concludes the follow-up questions from honorable members. Can we then hand over to the DG and also Deputy Minister?
I don't know if the Deputy Minister wants to come last this time around, or we should sustain it.
Let's hear from the Deputy Minister. He's leaving everything to you. It's fine also.
Okay.
Deputy Minister, I'll still with us.
It's okay.
Yes,
we'll see here, but we're leaving to the DG to respond.
Okay.
Okay.
No, thanks very much.
I'll be assisted by my colleagues, but let me pick this one up that is skipped regarding the diplomat who did not come back. This was one of the most difficult tasks. We did experience a situation where colleagues at the time when they were supposed to have returned requested that they stay in their countries of accreditation for the head comorbidities, and our view was that it will not be in our best interest because everyone else was coming back and it is a well-known defined period by which one must come, and we did decline their request and they took us to court and we had to defend ourselves, and in both cases the court ruled in our favor, but in another one the court postponed the matter in a year, but in essence acquiescing with our reasoning. And as I speak now, all those colleagues have come back successfully, and what they feared did not take place. And we have not yet met since then due to the fact that we were at the height of the level three. So the long and short of the matter is that it was a struggle, but which ultimately came to an end. That the colleagues are here, and nothing serious happened. The other difficult one, and colleagues will help me, on the humanitarian assistance process, the 21 countries. I would wish that when I finish to speak, maybe Lerato may be having the documents. Specifics. What I will respond here is that, as I said, we initiated a procurement process on a competitive basis. We advertised, which means we did not go the shortest route. And we received many bidders. However, there were complaints raised about one aspect of the specification relating to local content, and then we then requested permission from Treasury to add that aspect so that all could all together continue to participate in their bidding. If I'm not mistaken, I speak under protection, there might have been 200 and something bidders. I may be mixing with another. And then when we were receiving that to proceed, then Treasury withdrew its approval to allow us to effect that the aspect where we wanted to give all bidders opportunities to include in their declaration local content. And this really brought us down. There was
nothing we could do than to stop the procurement. So what we tried to do as a good measure and good corporate governance came back to hit us back, and we were not able to deliver on time on those. And we then were in the process of negotiating with the WHO to assist us to proceed with this process and with checks and balances in place. And when that happens, after it would have happened, obviously, we will be able to report back in what is taking place. And indeed, through our own project management processes, we will guard against any irregularity. So for now, to assure the honorable member is that we are still having what we had. We have not moved because of the circumstances as indicated, and we are exploring this alternative way, and we hope we will reach a point, because for us to have done that, we have had to store those things that have been stored before and put money together for the purpose of helping to fight this pandemic. But the reality showed that we could not as a result of that. The different breakdowns that the honorable member would ask for, maybe the Rato will assist me if she has that information with her now. I believe she should be. Regarding the free movement, I thought someone from SADC will speak, or from AU, but I must indicate that on this aspect, that indeed the ratification has been very slow, and there is a common SADC position, which was occasioned by the fact that there are some, we are at different levels of development when it comes to verification, etc., and which needed to be met. And as I said, the last time we had interactions with the department, I mentioned, because Home Affairs actually, if I still recall, did draft a document which we discussed, as far as I remember, once, which was guiding South Africa's position that will be taken further to SADC, etc. It was then when we achieved SADC, and I must confess that to give a full account of this, we might need to be given additional time to verify our facts. But we do note, of course, as the honorable member said, with the advent of AFCFTA, which in the main talks about movement of goods, it also presupposes that movement of persons should somehow be looked into. May I seek the indulgence of the committee to allow us to fully get in, give the honest process, in which case where we might recommend what to be done, we will do so. At this stage where I am just about what I said. In fact, I will immediately seek to get this additional information. But the truth of the matter is that protocol is widely offended by many. More than 30, I believe, I will have to recall, but only for ratified. And this ratification process within the continent and within us, because it with our own constitutional system, will also demand that prior to ratification, we should have made sure that it is in line with our laws and prescripts. So if there is no one to add to this from the branch, for now, I will pass this one on, but not close it. And I also thought that the AU desk will help us on the PIDA, which the NEPAD AU Development Agency is seized with, and I don't recall what we needed to say, but there are developments which I don't know who is here and who is not. I've forgotten how to determine. I want to invite a colleague from the desk to update us up to so far. It was similar to what I had thought Ambassador Zengi would have automatically come in on that one I spoke of from for the colleagues who did not come to the country. So if Ambassador Njinga is on the line, we can just add up on the matter of the infrastructure that is being driven from the NEPAD AUDA. I'm not sure, I don't know how to check. Is Ambassador Njinga or someone from the desk here?
Did you cover the issue of the students stuck from abroad before you give
to that one, to say we take note of the experiences as the Honorable Chair was spot on about, and I did mention that on this matter, our view was that having learned from those experiences, where for the first time we learned that provinces are able to send students abroad on their own without any information sharing, it then dawned to us at the time that there are students like that, and we expected to make sure that they come. While the coordination provisions of the Act will assist us in the future, but we want to submit that it is one of those lessons that have shown us that we need to prioritize how our citizens in different forms and formats should handle their travel and whereabouts, where we are accredited or where we have missions, so that as much as we know how people live in the country, we can know and develop a control measure, because I can assure you, Honorable Members, there's a lot of those. Some people couldn't even go back, and they lost their places. And they were just writing to us every day, and then where we were asked to even interfere in the sovereign laws of other countries because of the manner in which we were kind of then forcing those countries to review and give them access again, etc. So my little submission to it is that the truth of the matter is that it is as the Honorable Member has observed, and we as a department are working on how we can manage this, and the what DELCO will do, it will fall back into the long term of what we include in the regulations or codes relating to coordination, how the whole international work is to be coordinated. This will be applying to the future. But even before that kicks in, we are looking at ways in which through our CIFR, the Committee of International CIFR, it's a committee at the DG level with provinces, where we have put it as an agenda item. As much as we are going to talk to normal provincial and municipal other processes that they just do and go, we need to put them to account, as now we will be empowered by legislation to control such, to prevent the unintended such as what we experience there. So as we will be presenting to the committee on the implementation of the Act, I think what that which will come up front will be to show how we will be able to handle this going forward. Thank you.
Uh, Ambassador, can you cover the area that the AG said, and then I think that will then conclude your the DG's responses.
For any other colleague here, I'm trying to open the participants. I'd expected all the DGs. I didn't check the apologies. There was an apology that was stated. But suffice to say, honorable members, when we present the AU chairship, we will dedicate a part on this matter of the Program for Infrastructure Development in Africa, which I refer to as PIDA, and we will then give account to what the honorable member would like to be apprised of. I think it is very important for the portfolio committee indeed to have a line of sight about that, and we will package it together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. It's almost getting closer to 2 p.m., which is the time where we should conclude this meeting. But thanks very much. And I don't see any hands anymore from honorable members. And thanks very much. And of course, this is work in progress. Can't exhaust everything, but I think for the purpose of today, we've managed to engage on issues and ask questions, and other issues that still have to be dealt with going forward. So thanks very much, honorable members, for your participation, DG and your team. Thanks very much for the presentation and the responses to the honorable members' questions. Deputy Minister Mashego Dlamini, thanks very much. And the Deputy Minister Protest in his absence, we really appreciate your presence. Before then, I conclude. Any closing remarks, Deputy Minister Mashego? No, Deputy Minister Protest is not with us. And then after your concluding remarks, then we'll conclude the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We really appreciate the discussion on our report, and we have noted all the issues that members have commented on, and we are prepared as the department to improve on all the issues that you feel we have the gaps, and we are aware that we have the gap definitely on the supply chain section, but the CFO is dealing with that particular matter together with the minister and ourselves. So we'll try our best to really sort ourselves out, and we really appreciate that the ARF is doing very well, and we are delaying it in terms of the supply chain issues. That is the issue that we are all aware of. So we'll try our best to resolve such issues. Other issues, I think it's really appreciated that in every meeting that we have, I think the committee must also put the recent issues that need to be briefed on, so that the political office must prepare and come to and brief the members in every meeting, even besides the agenda items. So I really want to appreciate the meeting, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for those concluding remarks. We will, of course, take into account what you are suggesting and convey that to the Chair of the committee. Honorable members, thanks very much. It has been a very fruitful, constructive meeting, robust in its nature. But that's what we are all about, robust oversight. And the department, I think, there is a level of improvement, and keep on trying to do that. At the end of the day, we have the response. responsibility to be of service to the broader society, public members of South Africa. And with those words, just want to thank every one of you, and especially Honorable Nola. We know that you are not feeling well, but you have persevered, and we wish you a speedy recovery. Without wasting any time, and then the support staff that was with us, our secretariat of the committee, thanks very much. And the meeting is officially concluded. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chief.